Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Valspar Championship. Joining me to break it all down, Sia Najad is here. Sia, hello.
Hello. How we doing? So, I got an announcement to make. Not really. Although I wanted to talk some smack about the Scottie Scheffler thing, but I've been in the basement so long, there's just no need to do that. I've been really good. I want everybody to know this show has been very good DFS wise lately. I almost had an outright, Rick, yesterday. But you know what happened? Corey Connors happened. I had an elite lineup with everybody peppered in the top 10 and the top five. I avoided the Keegan Bradley chalk. Corey Connors. I did not see that coming. I got to be honest. I had him in pretty much every lineup.
Speaking of guys I never get right, Corey Connors is certainly one of them, although I don't really play him all that much. So it doesn't end up super mattering compared to other guys that I do play a lot and I never get right. But yeah, so Sia, congratulations. You're back to the middle of the pack. We were kind of talking about it last night in terms of the one and done, that it has tightened in a way that is like best for the show, which is great. So we've got a lot of money still on the line and everybody's kind of getting a little bit closer together.
That's right. I mean, I think what's best for the show is me being in last place, if we're being honest, because it's just fun for me to always be at the bottom. But I guess it's also fun for me to be somewhere in the middle. It's funny when you win $4.5 million on one tournament, you all of a sudden start looking up and saying to yourself, I don't know, maybe I can catch Mark.
That's how it works. And there's a lot more millions to come. If you are a fan and you have not put your one and done selection in yet, that link is in the description so you can get your vote in right now for the fan selection. Unfortunately, the fans had John Rahm last week, and there is another link in the description that is quite important. This is what I imagine, Sia, is the least productive Monday outside of maybe the Monday after the Super Bowl, as everyone furiously fills out their brackets and tries to beat Janice in accounting.
Only to be outdone by the least productive Thursday of the year, because you know that's what people are going to be doing on Thursday is watching their brackets crash and burn or give themselves a shot. I mean, I think Thursday and Friday, whether you're a college basketball fan or not, the March Madness brackets get so many people involved because, you know, even people who just aren't really watching can look at the seeds and know the big schools and just kind of put their bracket in there. I just think Thursday and Friday are such an exciting time for sports.
There are already 274 brackets in the First Cut bracket game. So go on and see if you can beat us. You'll see all of us in there trying to put it our best cracks at it. CBSSports.com/First Cut is the direct link. If you're looking for that, they're running both the men's and the women's pool. So you can invite friends, create your own, all that fun stuff, and potentially win a new car or a trip to the 2024 Final Four, which is pretty, pretty good. Okay, Sia, just to turn this back to golf a bit, we are rocking and rolling with our round-by-round recaps this week. We'll have our mega preview pod on Tuesday. We are growing like a weed. The First Cut YouTube channel is going nuts, so we're asking people to subscribe. We are trend. Like 2 days ago, it feels like we had 7,500 subscribers. Now we're trying to get to 10K before you know it.
That's incredible. I wasn't aware of that. That's good stuff. And Rick, I assume it's still good for people to go out and review the podcast as well, right?
I imagine all that stuff that we should be asking people for all the time, you know, like, subscribe, comment, go leave a 5-star rating and review. That probably all goes along. We should probably mention that more frequently.
I think so. Everybody in there. I see a bunch of people in there. Brett Celeste is a cool name. It sounds like a fake. Brett Celeste is in the chat. Thank you for being here. It sounds like one of those fake like stage names, like an actor or actor's name, for example. Brett Celeste. That's just perfect. It's too perfect.
Did you ever have those Celeste frozen pizzas when you were growing up?
Yes.
That's all. I think
the frozen stuff.
That's all I think about when I see Brett in the chat. Sorry, Brett. Or congrats, Brett. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. All right, let's talk about this. So we've got Valspar this week, and this is an event that's been going on for about 20 years or so. We've got a bunch of different multiple champions, and we're going to go to the Innisbrook Resort, the Copperhead course. Troy, if you could share my screen, that'd be splendid. Maybe not. There we go. RickRunGood.com. This is the course key stats model. The Copperhead course, Sia, obviously our final leg of the Florida swing. You've got water, as we tend to do in Florida, on 9 different holes. And we are going to provide a unique challenge to the field this week.
It will be a unique challenge. I mean, this is going to be a tough course, and we'll have to kind of wait and see if wind is going to factor in as well. So that's just something to consider as we move towards Thursday. But I like this model, particularly because it's really emphasizing approach. And that's certainly what I'm going to be emphasizing. I think you could kind of focus on ball striking like a lot of people do on almost every tournament. But for me, I think tee to green, which is on here as well, and approach are going to be really, really important. It's such a unique course, Rick, because you've got the long par threes, so, you know, but then you also have the shorter par fours, and then you got some challenging par fives. To me, that I haven't actually looked at the percentage of shots that are in, like, let's say the 175 to 200 plus range. I know it's a good amount, but to me, you need the whole bag here.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned the approach play. So if you look at the model on my site, it says it ranks 5th, which means there's only 4 other courses in which strokes gained approach is more important. That's pretty significant, especially because strokes gained approach is usually one of the highest correlated stats in general. No matter what the rank is, the value is pretty good. And then it also likes scrambling. It also likes around the green a little bit. If you're going to be missing those greens, you're going to have to get up and down from some creative spots. I'll show the scorecard here, Sia, because you're right. The 5 par 3 is what makes this a par 71. So there's 3 par threes on the back. All of them on the back measure 200 yards or more. There are 630 yards of par threes on the backside alone. Then you add in a 235 yard par 3 8th, a 195 yard par 3 4th. That is the shortest of the three. So it is a quite a challenging and long set of threes that we have here.
That's right. So, I mean, I think it's going to require you to kind of be really good with the long irons, particularly on those long par threes. I think the approach game is just so critical here, which is why, like, last week I was really focused more on ball striking. Here I'm looking at approach, and frankly, when I'm looking at Rick Run Good, I'm looking at weighted approach too. And I was, there were some eye-popping numbers when it came to which guys weighted out really well, weighted approach, whether you're looking last 24, 36, 50, what have you.
Yeah, weighted taking into account strength of field amongst other factors, and especially in a field like this, which is a little bit top heavy, and then you get guys from different tours and things like that, certainly valuable this week. We will start naming names, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right. Make sure your bracket is in. The link is in the description. But here is the cheat sheet over at rickrungood.com. And there are four golfers. See ya. Justin Thomas, 10-9. Jordan Spieth, 10-6. Sam Burns, 10-2. Matt Fitzpatrick, $10,000. That's the top of the board. How do we want to attack it?
You know, I'm not super interested in this range in terms of, you know, I don't know that I want to. I'm going to start a lot of lineups in the 9K range, which, you know, typically doesn't surprise anyone. But there are a couple guys here that are interesting to me. One in particular, one I think I'm going to play. Let's say I'm building 10 lineups. One of these guys is going to be in 3 or 4 of those 10 lineups. The other 6 are actually going to start in the 9K range, most likely, as we sit here on a Monday without, you know, weather factoring in and that type of thing. And guess who it is? Because this is not a guy I really ever talk about.
Honestly, I do not like this range, so I have no idea. Is it Jordan Spieth?
Yeah, it's Jordan Spieth. Yeah. I don't play Jordan Spieth. Actually, frankly, I don't play any of these guys really. And it's not like a blacklist thing. I just never get around to playing them. But I kind of like what Jordan Spieth is doing, particularly on approach. And we see the approach numbers here. For the record, if we're on the cheat sheet on Rick Run Good and we go to the weighted approach, which is how I look at weighted approach. I'm sure there's 1,000 other ways to look at it. If you rank it, and I did it by 24 rounds, but go ahead and rank it by 36 because Jordan Spieth is going to be up there. So he's not as high up in 36. Oh, there he is right there. Okay. But if you did that by 24 rounds, I think he's 3rd in weighted approach. So yeah, that's pretty high up there. What is he?
He's like 6th.
6th. Okay. So I like the weighted approach numbers. I like the approach numbers overall. The off the tee stuff with him, you know, what's interesting here, and I think this really needs to be pointed out, is this is definitely more of a positional golf course, Rick, where we're not necessarily taking driver out. And so I think Jordan, I like taking Jordan Spieth, or at least considering him, when it's a strategic golf course, when, you know, maybe you're laying up to a position, not laying up, but, you know, you're putting it on a position and then, you know, you're trying to dial in with your approaches. And if you don't hit the green, you know, we know Jordan Spieth can be pretty good with the scrambling, the around the green game. So I think Jordan Spieth, this could be one of those tournaments where we look back and we're like, yeah, this totally made sense that Jordan Spieth won this tournament. I don't mind him at all.
Yeah, so he's probably also my favorite in the 10K range. Not that I'm particularly stoked about any of these guys. What you noted, we probably should have talked about on the course side of things, where the average driving distance here is some of the shortest on tour, just because you are playing a little bit more positional golf. You don't necessarily have to hit driver in every single spot, and it actually, in that one regard, translates pretty well to Harbortown, which is obviously where Jordan Spieth has gotten his last victory last year. So that it does start to add up a little bit. And I think that you could argue there's some signs of encouragement that while the putter, while it looks ugly, while it feels ugly, while he clearly has no idea where it's going, the stats aren't that bad. And he's gained strokes on approach in 4 straight, ball striking in 4 straight. The around the green play gives him a couple of different angles to get here. So I do also side with Jordan Spieth when it comes out of the 10K range. You know, Justin Thomas to me, for being the most expensive golfer, Sia, I feel like I need a lot more of this out of this. You know, the approach plays there. He seems to be considerably lost with the flat stick. And I think that the savings of going down and filling up on these 9K guys is worth it over playing Justin Thomas this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that the upside with guys like Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and Sam Burns in particular, it's pretty great. I mean, the upside is definitely there. But then when you look at Justin Thomas at 10-9, and for the record, I thought this was going to be a tournament where you could even grab a couple of guys up top and still have a ton of money left over. Because, you know, when I first scanned the pricing, I was like, oh, this is pretty soft. I can probably make whatever lineup I want. It's just not true. I personally don't really want to dip below the 7,300 range. I'm good with some 7,300 guys. Below that, I think it's pretty suspect. I actually think that's where the drop-off is. So you can't really build, even if you pick one of these guys, it's really hard to build a lineup, especially if you like the 9K range, which I know we're about to transition to, because the 9K range is rich. There's a couple of guys that I think are going to be justifiably popular. And it's hard to build a lineup with, let's say, Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas, a 9K guy, and then have enough money left over to get like some of the 7K guys that you really want instead of those 7K guys that you're actually just settling with.
Let's do a temperature check on Sam Burns before we get out of this range here. Obviously, the 2022 champ, the 2021 champion, going for the three-peat this time around. Sia, I worry that he's kind of like a shell of himself at this point. You know, he was, and I love this, like the 200 round stat profile of Sam Burns is really, really good, and it's really good for winning golf tournaments. But he is so far off of that. Especially on approach. He's lost in three straight. One of them was massive. He's lost in 6 of 8. He's lost in 8 of 11. I mean, it's not good. Now, I don't know if he can do this thing where he flips the switch because he goes back to a place that he loves and he's got two trophies and he's trying to add a third. But man, this is pretty scary to click his name in the 10,000s.
It is. I mean, I still, there's plenty of upside. And for a guy who's won this thing twice, it's one of those situations where if for some reason everybody agrees with what you just said, Rick, then it does make sense to maybe pivot onto him. I will say, you know, looking at the round by round stuff, especially just from the players, because obviously it's not going to look good from the API. He did have two rounds where he kind of popped on approach, but then he had two rounds where he just wasn't good at all on approach. So I think you're right. The game's not really back there. But again, if for some reason ownership is low, which I don't think it'll be super low, then I think it's time to maybe consider Sam Burns for this tournament.
Just quickly on Matt Fitzpatrick, since he's the only guy in the 10K range we haven't talked about. Statistically, it's a little bit concerning because he's got the five losses on approach in his last six starts. You could write this off to the neck injury, which I think is honestly pretty fair. Mm-hmm. I just don't know, Sia. I guess it's more of a conversation of, are you going to be early or late on Fitzpatrick? Because obviously, when he's healthy and playing well, he's one of, if not maybe the best player in this field. But are you what percentage of risk are you willing to take on to try to get him early as opposed to needing to see one or two starts out of him?
Yeah, zero. I'm just not interested. I mean, it's funny. It reminds me a little bit, even though it's not a parallel, as it turns out, it reminds me a little bit of Xander Schauffele last week, where he was 10,000. And I even said then, I was like, yeah, I understand his ownership might be low and he might be a good tournament play. I'm just not going to get there with Xander. And what's funny is that I was like, yep, I was right. I'm patting myself on the back. And then Sunday hits and I'm like, oh my God, this guy's completely going off. I don't think there's any potential for that here with Matt Fitzpatrick. I do think there's potential for something like that where you have an incredible spike round like Xander did just yesterday. I think you have that potential with Sam Burns. I think you obviously have that potential with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. I'll go ahead and pay up for one of those guys. I'm not touching Matt Fitzpatrick right now.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to the 9K range. This is where I think both of us agree that there is a plethora of riches. Tommy Fleetwood at 98, Justin Rose at 96, Keegan Bradley 94. Then the bottom of the range, Denny McCarthy, Adam Hadwin, Brian Harman, Davis Riley. I mean, pretty stout stuff here, Sia.
Yeah, this is a pretty good range. I like Tommy Fleetwood a lot, and I played him a lot last week too. In fact, the lineup that I actually could have won an outright in, it was in the $33 single entry on DraftKings, and that was the one that had Corey Connors in it. So, I mean, it's not like it was that close, but if he had made the cut, well, my point is Tommy Fleetwood was one of those. I had Tom Hoagie, I had Tommy Fleetwood, I had Scottie Scheffler, of course. and Victor Hovland. So it was a really great lineup. And Fleetwood was honestly until the last like handful of holes where he double bogeyed coming in twice, not only on 17, but I believe on 14 as well. You know, it didn't end up being a good finish, but I think Tommy Fleetwood is perfect here. I think his number at 25-1 is also a pretty reasonable number. I'm just quoting DraftKings. I'm sure it's a different number somewhere else, but I like Tommy Fleetwood quite a bit. And it's pretty much for the same reasons we talked about last week on this very show, because I talked about Tommy Fleetwood there as well. The other two guys that I'm moderately interested in here, Keegan Bradley coming off a missed cut. I don't know. Again, the industry is a little sophisticated here. So just because he missed a cut, it doesn't mean everybody's going to be off of him all of a sudden. But I do like Keegan Bradley. He lost most of his strokes last week around the green. A little off the tee as well, but it was, as we can see here, do you have it pulled up? Yeah, the players. 2.34 around the green. That's not very good. I don't expect that here. The putter was fine last week. It was decent. And the history here is decent. So I think he's a really good course fit. And then finally, Adam Hadwin, elite history, good course fit. His weighted tee to green numbers, he's fifth over the last 24 rounds. I think Adam Hadwin is a solid play. Another guy I put in that Tommy Fleetwood ilk where I wouldn't shock me if he wins this tournament.
Yeah, I actually think Adam Hadwin might win this golf tournament. You know, he's been playing great golf. He has the ability to pop in two different categories, which is a pretty high upside way to do it. He gained 7 strokes in the ball striking categories of the players. He gained 10 in those in Houston, 5 in Phoenix, which is obviously a much deeper field. Has won this event. Has not only won this event, but he's got a T7 here last year, another T12 in 2018. What I find most interesting about Adam Hadwin is this right here. He's lost strokes putting in two or more in three consecutive starts, which is very uncharacteristic. I don't think I could find another instance of him doing that in his career. So it's a little bit concerning, but I don't think it's far enough off. I think you could actually get like a 5-stroke rebound in the putting department, which turns him from like a T13 to a potential winner. So I do think Hadwin is really, really interesting. I think Hadwin and Tommy Fleetwood for me are 1 and 2, but I must give a little bit of credit here to Justin Rose. You know, he has really buttoned up the aspect of his game that was quite frankly horrible. That was the approach play. That was the ball striking. And you can see that basically since Mayakoba and kind of into the new year, he's been a much better ball striker, and he still has this tidy little short game, you know, a T6 last week where he put together a great stat line and a win at Pebble Beach a couple of starts ago. Yeah, he's got a couple of missed cuts, but like, listen, this isn't the Players Championship field, right? Mm-hmm. Like we gotta kind of take what we can get here. So those are probably my three favorite here. But yeah, I mean, like Denny's been good. You mentioned Keegan. I don't mind basically anybody in this $9,000 range.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point. I mean, I do mind Brian Harman. I think I just don't think I've ever played Brian Harman, and I'm always so super stoked when people are like, I'm playing Brian Harman this week, because I'm like, all right, that's one less person I have to deal with. Now, granted, he might be that he does feel like a decent course fit here, but I mean, these numbers are just pretty horrific.
He's just not he's in the midst of a really bad stretch of golf.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those situations where, you know, we always talk about the pivot, the guy that's super low owned. It's not a blanket rule that you know, making that pivot is the right sort of GPP or tournament play, because there are some guys that just are very obviously playing bad. So, you know, my point is don't always pivot to the lowest owned guy. Like you can do that and it might turn out great, but there's usually some guys that are also low owned, maybe a little bit more owned, that actually are coming in with like really good form. So it's just something to think about. I think for this range, you make a really good point about Justin Rose, because I think we think of Justin Rose and some of these guys, even like, let's say, a Keegan Bradley or even a Denny McCarthy, Adam Hadwin, in the context of a field at the Players, in the context of these fields that they're normally in. Whereas a guy like Will Gordon, for example, we think of them maybe in lesser fields. A guy, this is a really good chance for a guy like Justin Rose or Tommy Fleetwood, Keegan Bradley. And we saw it recently with Justin Rose to just really capitalize on the lack of talent in the field. So even if you didn't like Justin Rose last week, well, that makes sense because it was in the Players field. Here, it's a completely different story in terms of the analysis.
I agree. I'm just kind of clicking through a couple of results here, seeing if anything jumps out at me. Okay, we'll continue this conversation. We'll go to the eights, the sevens, the sixes. We'll see what we can find in some of the value ranges here. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hit yourself the like button, hit yourself the subscribe button, and we'll give you 6 podcasts and 6 YouTube videos a week. The $8,000 range: Justin Suh, Wyndham Clark, Matt McNeely, Gary Woodland, Brandon Wu. Then we round it out with Ben Griffin, Taylor Moore, Aaron Rye has just withdrawn, so don't play him, JT Poston, and KH Lee. Where do you want to go first, CM?
This is such an interesting range. So I want to go first to Justin Suh. Another guy that I think could actually win this tournament. He's plus 3,500, otherwise known as 35-1 for the uninitiated. I think Justin Suh is another guy that could really kind of make his name even more known than it already is. He's been on fire lately. All the stuff I looked at for my model, like greens in regulation, obviously ball striking approach. I looked at around the green and putting a little bit, but certainly Suh's not going to flash in the putting department necessarily, but he checks most of the boxes I had in my model. And for the record, if you wanted to look at the buckets, if you will, the longer approaches, he's really good there too. So I think Justin Suh at 8,900, I don't want to say he's a value necessarily because the price is right, but I think he has some serious upside potential. We've seen it recently with him.
I would also argue he has been much better with the putter, right? I mean, he's got gains in, what is that, 5 of his last 6 and 6 of his last 9. And a lot of them are multiple strokes gained. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely an improvement with the flat stick. I'll offer up Wyndham Clark as someone who I think could legitimately win this golf tournament. Mm-hmm. He has been, and we've done a fairly comprehensive job of tracking Wyndham Clark during mm-hmm. this run, where he has not missed the cut since the Shriners, and how he's put together a couple of decent results and how he is just knocking the cover off the ball. I mean, it's pretty nuts. And he did it again at the Players Championship. He didn't even hit his second shots all that well, but he gained nearly 5 strokes off the tee, finished T27, a tiny loss on approach, but otherwise gained in all 3 other categories. I mean, this is a pretty good stat profile for a guy who's clearly playing well, clearly playing confident golf. And then you throw him in, I mean, probably one of the weaker fields he's seen in a while. I mean, he played the Players, the API, the Genesis, Phoenix, Farmers, since like the American Express. So this is this is Wyndham Clark probably licking his chops thinking he can win this thing.
100% true. And we've been, like you said, we've been tracking him. And what's really funny is I've been playing him every week for I don't know how long. And it's because he's really revolutionized his game. He's not the off the tee bro that we have always kind of conceived him as. He has really dialed in on approach. Honestly, he should have had a better result last week. It was just the short game, particularly in round 4, that really, really ended up stinging him. But yeah, I love the approach numbers. If you look last 24 rounds weighted approach, I believe he's best in the field weighted approach last 24 rounds. And I believe he's best weighted tee to green last 24 rounds as well.
I believe that because I mean, I rattled off those weeks that he has been just piling up approach on tee to green numbers are these massive events that are going to get you a lot of credit in the weighted stuff. So that makes a ton of sense. I mean, even going back to the CJ Cup, he's played great in basically every big event. Who else in this $8,000 range should we consider?
By the way, one watch out with Wyndham Clark. I want to bounce this off of you, Rick, because if you look at his just accuracy numbers off the tee, they haven't been very good. And my thing here, though, is that there's so much clubbing down. There's so much just playing position that we got to think guys like Sam Burns, for example, or Wyndham Clark, it's not like they're pulling out driver most of the time. I mean, these guys. So my point is, am I right in suggesting that maybe looking at some of those accuracy numbers for this tournament, it doesn't make a lot of sense, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen this with Cam Champ over the years as well, where he gets the kind of club down, and even Gary Woodland to an extent when he was longer. I mean, still pretty long, all things considered. So yes, this is not your normal, just like a lot of times there's 20 spots on the PGA Tour that Wyndham Clark's going to play where he just pulls driver and doesn't really care about where it goes accuracy wise, just hit it as far as you can. And that's a pretty good game plan. But these guys aren't robots that do that every single time. They're going to look at ways to play this golf course and where they need to be and angles that they need to attack it from. And often club down here is what we've seen historically.
So it's such a professional transition. It's as if we scripted this out, Rick, because the next guy I was going to mention, and I'm really undecided on him. It's Gary Woodland.
I want it so bad, but he is so bad with the putter. It's unbelievable. He lost 7 at the Players. He lost 5.5 in Phoenix. He lost 5.5 at Torrey Pines. He's gained like once dating back to the Scottish Open. I mean, he is literally capable of wiping away 5 to 7 strokes gained on approach because of the putter.
And frankly, it's interesting because he profiles so well here, but his history here is pretty bad. So, and maybe we can go back and find out if he actually lost it with the putter at the Valspar the last, you know, 4 efforts here.
He's lost it at the Copperhead course with the putter 7 straight trips. Now the year that he gained the most, he won. He gained 8 strokes putting that week though, which is probably one of the best putting performances of his career.
So disclosure here, I did make a model, which, you know, for those of you that don't know, I don't strictly adhere to my model. It's more of just kind of instructive to me, but I didn't put an emphasis on putting. I'm almost no emphasis on putting. And because of that, Gary Woodland actually rated out number 1 in my model.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, he's like the king of team no putt, or at least one of them now. Emiliano Grillo, I think, is still the king. But I want to love this. I just, because I need him to gain 2 strokes with 1.5 strokes with the putter. I just don't know how realistic that is, but I want to love it.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. When I do play him, I'm so mad at myself afterward because he doesn't come through. He's probably one of like 5 or 6 guys where every time I'm kicking myself afterward. I just might play him in a couple tournaments though. Again, if we go back to the 10 tournament thing, I might end up playing him in a couple just because I can't ignore the ball striking. I cannot ignore it right now.
Ben Griffin would be the other guy that I would consider here. He's getting a lot of shine and for good reason. He actually lost strokes off the tee at the Players, but still finished T35. I think that he has a couple of different ways to get there. If you like the scrambling, get hot with the putter side of things around Copperhead, cool. If you like, you know, driving it well and being a 1 to 2 stroke gainer on approach, like he has that ability as well. If he puts it all together, who knows what his upside is at this point. And he's only missed that one cut, which was at Pebble Beach in the 3 course rotation. So I think that Griffin continues to play well, continues to show he belongs here.
I agree, actually. I had Ben Griffin written down as well. I wasn't necessarily going to talk about him because he had been doing so much with the short game. But, you know, what's interesting is he's lost 3 out of 4 with the ball striking. But if you just go prior to that, which we're not talking about that long ago, he's gained 7 in a row with the ball striking. So clearly a pretty great ball striker as far as I can tell. The one thing about him that's a watch out, and again, I have, just like you, Rick, I've kind of veered away from the buckets thing, but the long iron play didn't seem to be his strong suit by any means. So that's just something to consider here.
Anybody else in this $8,000 range that needs discussing?
I think we covered it. Brandon Wu, I think, is worth a discussion. The ball striking wasn't great last week. I don't know if you remember. I had basically two 6K plays that I really liked, and Brandon Wu was one of them. I believe it was last week at 6,400. I think Johnny Vegas, in full disclosure, was the other one, so that didn't exactly work out. But I just like how the game is trending. He was 33rd here last year. Now, last week, he gained 7 strokes with the putter, so you know that's not going to happen again. He did lose ball striking, but Brandon Wu's been finding a way to kind of get it done. And I think he's worthy of a discussion, mostly because I don't think people are really going to play him. I think people are recognizing that Brandon Wu is, it might be a thing, but they're going to be more inclined to play Ben Griffin right below him or Wyndham Clark right above him.
Brandon Wu finished T33 here last year in 2022, his only appearance at the Valspar Championship. $7,000 range. Benyon, Steven Yeager, Victor Perez, down to Kevin Kisner, Harry Hall, David Lipsky, Chad Ramey, et cetera, et cetera. How would we like to allocate our funds here, Sia?
We should do like this show and then a 7K show, because there's always so many names.
I know.
And I'm really curious to see if anybody really pops in the 7K range from an ownership standpoint. Listen, ownership is not the end all be all. Like, you can play highly owned guys depending on what your lineup construction is, but I don't think there's going to be, I think the larger point I'm making, I think in the 7K range, you're pretty much going to be able to play whoever you want and not really worry about ownership too much. I might end up being wrong on a couple guys, but this thing is wide open. I'll start with Steven Yeager at 7,800. He's gained ball striking 7 out of the last 8. Now, interestingly enough, he's lost with the putter in 7 of the last 8. So you get it's almost like the Gary Woodland experiment, just to a slightly lesser extent. He hasn't been as bad with the putter. Can I ask you, Rick, before I get to my next guy, do you consider this course more of a team no-putt course or the other way? Or neutral on it?
It's a good question. I hadn't considered that. I'm trying to think who's won in the past. So Burns, I mean, Paul Casey won back-to-back years. He was a pretty good team no putt guy.
And Sergio did well. He's done well here as well, right?
I think that sounds right. So I you know, off the top of my head, I could say, I mean, the thing that you get, especially in Florida, you generally get some flatter greens, and they're usually a little bit easier to putt. I don't know that specifically about the Copperhead course, but I mean, I could see that.
Fair enough. I mean, I think maybe that enhances the argument for guys like Steven Yeager, Gary Woodland, and of course, Kyle Stanley at 6,200. Jonathan Vegas is interesting, you know, miscut. I don't think the ownership is going to be too high regardless, but the miscut certainly will lower to a couple percentage points. Seventh weighted tee to green last 24 rounds. And we know he's an excellent ball striker, and we know he's great on approach. Obviously, he wasn't great on approach at the Players, and he certainly wasn't great around the green either. But I think Vegas, let's put it this way. If Vegas made the cut last week, which is a reasonable thing to have happened. I know it didn't happen, but it's certainly a reasonable thing to have happened. And let's say he finished 41st or 36th. Johnny Vegas would be 8,500 where Brandon Wu is. So I just think we're seeing a number here in this field where Johnny Vegas should probably be in the mid 8K range, but because of the miscut, we have him at 7,700. So it's just one of those built-in value upside arguments I like to make with not a misprice, but with certainly a value. A couple other names. I'll just kind of just bypass Robbie Shelton for a second. I've been playing Robbie Shelton. I do think he's a decent course fit. Another guy that can absolutely crash and burn with the putter. And the ball striking hasn't been great lately, but typically he can be really hot on approach. So I think I'd be willing to play him. Another favorite of mine, Will Gordon at 7,500, dialed in on approach. Around the green has been hurting him last couple tournaments, but the putter can get hot, dialed in on approach. Don't mind Will Gordon at all. I'll name two other guys that are very interesting to me. Joel Damon is interesting to me, but that's not one of the guys I'm going to mention. And I want your thoughts on one of these guys specifically, because I don't know much about him. Tyler Duncan. So that's not one of the guys that I do know much about. I do know about Tyler Duncan.
Unfortunately, yeah, we know a lot about Tyler Duncan.
Yeah, and the reality is he's flashed some upside lately. Third place at the Honda. He's gained ball striking 4 tournaments in a row. Had some impressive putting performance, some spike putting performances, and his experience here is good. So it's 7,300, and that's kind of where that line of demarcation is, where I just don't really want to go lower than that. The other guy, though, Rick, that I wanted to ask you about at 7,300 is Ryan Gerard. Fourth at the Honda. The approach numbers look good. Small sample size. He Monday queued to get into the Honda, by the way. Ended up finishing fourth. And then he qualified or conditionally qualified, whatever it was, for Puerto Rico. And he finished 11th there. I mean, this is that's a nice little run. And perhaps this guy has some talent justifying him being at 7,300. Because this is a name where I would have been like, Ryan Gerard, what is he, like 6,600? I don't know.
Yeah, I would argue he has four good starts in a row. So he has the T3 at the Astara Golf Championship. That's a Korn Ferry Tour event. Then I would lump the Monday Q for the Honda into that, obviously being good enough to get, you have to go super low at a Monday qualifier. Mm-hmm. And then to parlay that into a fourth at the Honda, which is 8.6 strokes gained in the ball striking categories, is very impressive around PGA National. Then because of that fourth place finish, he gets into Puerto Rico. Is that right? Because I thought I saw he was on a sponsor's invite, but that would make sense that his fourth place finish got him into Puerto Rico. But
that was my understanding as well.
Yeah, maybe I misread that or read it for a wrong guy, but his fourth place should have gotten him into Puerto Rico. And he finishes T11. Oh, no, he's a sponsor's invite into this one because his T11 did not. Yeah. Sorry. That's what I was. He's a sponsor's invite into the Valspar. And it's well deserved. So yeah, man. I mean, I don't want to liken him to Tom Kim or Will Zalatoris or Akshay Bhatia or even Minwoo Lee, right? But we have seen time and time again that guys emerge, right? They're always emerging. And the line has never been more blurred between the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour, and the best, 500 players in the world are all unbelievable. So you're getting a guy who has a lot to play for, who is playing really, really well. I don't mind going back to Ryan Gerard.
I mean, I love seeing a guy Monday qualify and then top fiving. To me, that's like extremely impressive. That means you are clearly in a groove as far as I can see it.
Couple of notables that I'll throw out there. Let's talk Victor Perez for a second. If you do just raw strokes gained across six tours that rickrungood.com covers, last 36 rounds, Victor Perez is the best player in the field. Now, you have to qualify that by saying all of those rounds are DP World Tour rounds. So he drops a little bit in the weighted stuff. I think he becomes 18th in the weighted numbers. But a win in Abu Dhabi three starts ago, he drives it well. He's pretty well-rounded. He finished 12th in Dubai at their DP World Tour Championship. He's made a bunch of cuts and a bunch of great finishes. This, I said earlier in the day, Sia, this reminds me a lot of Minwoo Lee. Minwoo Lee was playing, he was playing better than Victor Perez has, but this is a guy whose last 18 starts have been on the DP World Tour. It's away from American eyes. People might not realize how well he's playing, and he's got two wins, one in Abu Dhabi and one at the Dutch Open since, I guess that goes back to May of 2020, about almost in less than a year. So he's got two wins, a third, a couple of thirds, and a couple of really good other finishes just in the last 10 months or so.
My only question for Victor Perez would be, and it's not a question I actually want to ask Victor Perez, so I should rephrase that. My only question for you, Rick, about Victor Perez is that strength off the tee seems like it's going to be kind of minimized quite a bit here in what's going to be a positional golf course off the tee, right?
Well, we'll see, right? I mean, if his strength is long and straight and he can take a couple of opportunities that other guys cannot, it's admittedly, this is basically all we know about him. Like, we don't know a ton of other things. We don't have obviously the full detailed stuff from the European Tour, but we have a lot of it. But yeah, I mean, it's a valid concern. I mean, another valid concern is just that his last 18 starts have been on the DP World Tour, and now he comes over to the PGA Tour and he's got to get acclimated. You got to find out where the locker room are. I mean, it's just like all this stuff that we see guys often stumble in their first start and then get into the routine. Another valid concern would be he hasn't played in 5 or 6 weeks. Right. So, I mean, it is not without concern for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. But no, it's a good call out because I don't think many people are going to play Victor Perez. So among some potentially popular names like Johnny Vegas and I mean, your boy Akshay Bhatia, is he going to be popular? No, he's not going to be popular. But are you playing him is the question.
Well, I guess it depends on his popularity. So Akshay is very, very volatile. If you're looking for low floor, high ceiling, we've got your guy, runner-up finisher of the Puerto Rico. He loves this event. He made his pro debut here. He's got those two great starts at the Bahamas, but he is absolutely capable of just blowing up and missing this cut or being in contention. So if that's what you're looking for, he's there. Pearson Coody's been has been great. Ryan Gerard, we touched on. I just want to make sure because I thought I had one more guy that I wanted to talk about.
Is it your boy Bo Hostler? Ben Martin is here, who's one of my guys. I'm not 100% sure if I'm playing him this week.
Yeah, Ben's been good. I actually wanted to talk about Alex Smalley, and not necessarily in a good way, because I think what'll happen is people say, oh, I remember this guy. He made an ace on 17 last week. He's probably been playing great golf. And unfortunately, his 2022 was awesome. He ended great. He had those three top 11s in a row, was like trending towards victory. And then that layoff is, we have not seen the same golf. Mm-hmm. We've just not seen it. And that's pretty concerning to me.
That was a name when I was scanning the mid 7Ks that I was like, man, Alex Smalley, like that seems like he has the upside to be played in this tournament. That might be true, but you're right. It hasn't been the same, but what I do like is that we've seen it before from him, and it wasn't that long ago. Does he find it this week on a tough course? That I don't think I'm willing to play that game with him.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I hope he gets back on track because he was exciting. He was trending. I mean, it was unbelievable how he finished 2022. But sometimes that break and you just can't get it back. And it looks like he's kind of stuck in something right now.
I've got another name for you, though. Two names that I just kind of want to see if they crossed your mind at all. One is Garrick Higo. The other one is Kramer Hickok.
Kramer Hickok, no. Higo, I've been unfortunately tracking way too much recently because I mean, he's clearly playing better. That's very clear. He finished T44 at the Players, and he misclubbed on, I think it was both 17 and 18. He had to get the wrong number from his caddy. He was 20 yards long he was over the island green on 17 and landed on turf. Like it's unbelievable. And he did the same thing the next hole. So it's just nuts, but he is clearly, I mean, look at his metrics, right? I'm not saying he's lighting the world on fire, but he has turned into an above average ball striker since Mayakoba. The putter is still a problem, but it's capable of gaining three, and his short game has gotten a lot better. So yeah, I am generally of positive sentiment when it comes to Garrick Higo.
So this ball striking is really quite good, especially at some of these events where we had serious talent. You know, he's almost a gainer ball striking at the API, but at the Players, gaining three ball striking. Oh, there's that in this field, coming in with that type of trajectory, knowing that he's been gaining ball striking over the last couple of months. That's an interesting one for me. I think I might have to play him here and there.
Yeah, he's been much better. The bar was low, but he's been much better.
Yeah, the bar was low.
Okay, the $6,000 range, I hate it. This, and I think you kind of alluded to it. I have like one guy maybe. I think you kind of alluded to this, that I don't like the 10K range, but I'm much more willing to go down to the 9K because I don't have to like live in the 6K. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like a two part deal.
In fact, I built a couple of lineups, as you know, and I did it with three 9K guys and three 7K guys that I liked. And I was able to do that lineup really well. Now, if I had gone up to the 10K range, there's just no way I would have been able to do that. So I think a lot of people are going to probably build a lot of those balanced lineups. I think a lot of people are going to grab like four 7K guys and then one 9K and one Jordan Spieth or Sam Burns or Justin Thomas. But yeah, I don't want to live in the 6K range at all. I just don't see the reason to do it because I do like so many 9 and even 8K guys. We talked about guys that we thought could actually win this tournament in the 8K, like Justin Suh, for example, like Wyndham Clark. So I think the win equity, especially if you think maybe those first four guys aren't going to perform super well, then I think all those 9K and 8K guys, I mean, that's where the leaderboard could be Sunday afternoon. But 6K range, Zach Johnson at 6,800, I think is interesting. His play hasn't been horrific as of late. Outside of that, I went down like super down low to like the 6,300 range. I looked at Bryce Garnett. I thought, okay, if I'm going to go down this far, I think Bryce Garnett is a decent play. Then there was another guy kind of in that Gerard range where I wasn't super familiar with him. I know he's been playing a little bit lately, but I haven't really evaluated him. He's at 6,300 and I assume I'm pronouncing this right. It's Kevin Roy. The weighted approach, the last 24, greens in regulation, last 24, pretty great. Again, we're talking about small sample sizes, but I'm also talking about the 6,300 range, trying to find a guy who might be on a positive trajectory. These numbers, they look pretty good.
I also assume it's Kevin Roy. You don't think he's French Canadian and it's like Kevin Waugh, that's why, right?
Exactly, yeah. Like Patrick Waugh, right?
Yeah, he was the best. Yeah, so C is right. I mean, it gained 6 strokes at PGA National on approach. It's 6 consecutive weeks gaining, and then the one week that we don't have the advanced data for Puerto Rico, he finished T33. So it's seriously not that bad. The other thing is, you know, he misses the cut at the American Express, but he gains 2.5 strokes that week, just on the wrong end of the mm-hmm. course rotation there. And same thing kind of with Pebble, is he misses the cut on the number. He's kind of got on the wrong end of these course rotations and has played better, I think, than what his results indicate. The one guy that I would go with is Dylan Wu.
I like both Wu's. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, speaking of the ball striking numbers, I mean, it's 4 in a row. 2 of them were big wins at Pebble and Honda. He finished T35 at the Players last week, so now he's got 4 solid starts in a row, 5 out of 6. If you remember, his start to having his full membership was not good. He basically missed like every single cut, and now he's made 8 of 10, and he's playing a lot better, and he's got everything kind of, I don't want to say buttoned up, but he's got everything, you know, shored up and headed in the right direction. So he's the guy that I think if he was 7,500, I don't think I'd bat an eye at it. But yeah, man,
yeah, this is tough. Agree. That was actually an amazing profile for somebody that's 6,600.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot better than his peers, and he's doing it in the right way. And I just like to see this, like, I think a lot of people want everybody to come on tour and be Victor Hovland and be Colin Morikawa. And mm-hmm. I mean, even Matt Wolf won the month after he turned pro. Like, that, it's just, that is so uncommon. And we've been spoiled with that. And we've been spoiled with like Zalatoris getting his card immediately and having success. And it's just like, this is much more common where a guy struggles for a year and like barely keeps his card. And then you start to see natural progression, right? That's what you want to see. And we're now in that part for Dylan Wu, where we're getting the natural progression. We're getting the idea that he feels like he probably fits in and he can compete week in and week out.
I liken it to the quarterback that gets drafted and gets inserted right away. And it's like, hey, listen, some of these guys are going to pan out like Justin Herbert, but some of them need 3 or 4 years to actually acclimate themselves to the defenses and to the, you know, just to the whole experience. And Justin Suh is another good example of that. Like, I thought he was like a guy that was going to come and go real quick. And then, you know, here he is kind of being the Justin Suh that people like yourself always thought he could be. So I totally agree with that. We, you know, writing these guys off is a mistake, both in general and in DFS.
Very quickly, if you're desperate or you're looking for some high upside, Nico Echevarria, he just won in Puerto Rico. Wouldn't mind going back there. Vincent Norman, incredibly talented, hits the ball. It sounds like a shotgun anytime he hits the golf ball. Vincent Norman is pretty good. And then Augusto Nunez has been playing better golf as well. So those would be 3 other guys that I'd consider. But I would prefer not to be here if I could.
Yeah, Ryan Moore is at least interesting to me, but if I was going to go that low, I'd probably just go to Roy and take the chance there.
I love it. Okay. Anybody else? Are we good here?
I think we're good. Carson Young. He's flashed lately.
He had like a 5-shot lead in Puerto Rico going into the weekend. And if he wins, I would have won the $100 single entry. And
are you serious,
dude? I had the lineup, man. It wasn't all his fault, because heading into the weekend, I had like literally 6 guys inside the top 10 and Carson Young. And I just needed I needed Carson Young to win or Harry Hall to win, or there was like 3 guys that. If anybody but Nico Echevarria wins, I'm hoisted, but not to be.
Wow. That's crazy.
All right. Let us suspend all logic and reason and go to our very popular and growing strokes gained narrative segment. I believe we have six different strokes gained narrative lineups this week, Sia, and I'm sure there was more that didn't make the cut.
Well, there was a lot more, actually, and which is so great. Six is as many as we'll ever go. Usually it'll just be like four or five, but we have six. One came in at the buzzer, I believe, from Jake, and it was actually really, really funny. We had a couple like football crossovers that were really good, but we just had too many. So this thing is more popular than people think.
The people just love putting me through the ringer. These are going to be so hard.
This is tough. This is one of the toughest ones.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're new to this, people put together lineups based on any narrative that they want. Now, there's a lot of snake stuff, a lot of painter stuff this week because Valspar and the snake pit and all that stuff. So I don't even know who this first one is from. That part is cut off, so apologies. But
it's Brent Harris. I believe this is Brent Harris. Okay. It's the first one that came in.
Okay, Brent. So when the PGA players go to Valspar, they get a lifetime supply of paint. Is that true?
I have no idea. It sounds true, actually.
They just to play it, or if they win?
Just to play it, probably.
What? You think Valspar's shelling out 150 lifetime supplies of paint every year?
And how much paint do people need?
I mean, I guess
professional golfers at that.
I guess they can afford it. That is true. It sounds great, but like, would you ever use this?
maybe
one time. Like, if you like repainted your house, you'd be like, great. But like, you're not gonna do that like every year.
Can somebody fact check that for us real quick? Because that does sound kind of ridiculous. But
it is so ridiculous. It is so ridiculous that like it probably costs them nothing because no one ever takes them up on it.
Right.
That's wild. All right. So this is so difficult. Brent says, I present the painters of the PGA Tour strokes gain narrative lineup. Vincent Van Rooyen. Salvador Dalí.
That's pretty good.
Salvador Dalí. That's pretty good. Pablo Pahigo. This one I don't know. JT Post Cezanne.
That's right. You pronounced it right.
Wow. Man. I don't know. Jean Samuel Bernsquiant.
Actually, don't know who that is. I
have no idea.
No clue.
And Gary Woodhull instead of Warhol. Andy Warhol. That's right. Mm-hmm. Oof, that Brent, you can just keep those to yourself moving forward. I'm gonna have to pronounce this stuff. Chris at DFS Influencer says this is a post Oscars malaise over on. He plays on Yahoo, it appears. So, okay, I see what he's done here. So he has taken golfers and movie titles. So The Hustler, which is actually The Hustler, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Avatar, The Tway of Water. That's pretty good. Kevin Tway, The Way of Water. Big Hubbard in Little China.
Yeah, Big Trouble in Little China. 80s movie.
Thank you. War of the Justin Roses. Bramlett, The Right One In.
I assume that's a movie called Let the Right One In, but I did not fact check that.
Wings of Kazire. Let me tell you how good I am at pop culture. Not good. Anytime we have to do songs or movies, I am cooked. And apparently painters, because I am very bad. Joseph, please save me here. Snake Pit. Oh, boy. Just Timber Rattlesnake Thomas. Byung Hyun Anaconda. Bryce Garnett Snake. Boa Hostler. Very good. Nicobra Echeverria, excellent. Tommy Fleetwood Snake, perfect. Thank you, Joseph. Amazing. Let's go to the next slide.
Hey, I'm going to make you a promise, Rick, because we have three more to go. I'll only bring four next time. Next week, everybody's battling for the top four. I'm letting everybody know right now.
Just what we really should do is we should make people submit them like in a video. Like just take a 10-second video of yourself reading them off so that I do not have to read. Like if you want to go the route of like, I feel like I'm butchering half of them, like, and they're not getting the respect that they deserve.
No, you're actually doing a much better job than you think.
All right. Thank you. The Model Maniac. So I believe these are also, paint items here. So Tyler Dung Canvas. Nice. Sean O'Brush Hair. Or it could be Sean brush O'Hare would also not be so bad either. Henrik Norlandscape. Beautiful. Justin Tom Masterpiece. Oh, Masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Peyton Kazire. Beautiful. And Lee Smudges.
That one makes me laugh. All right. Good job, Monomaniac.
At Fantasy Bunker, oh boy. I also noticed a few famous painters. Beautiful. I'm glad you did.
Bob Ross. Bob Rossler.
Oh, sick. Okay. Bob Rossler. That's very creative. My brain could not even wrap around the creativity of that one. Pablo Bill Picasso. Bill Haas. Pablo Picasso. Luke. Oh, sick. Luke Donald Tello. K.H. Leonardo da Vinci.
Strong.
Garrick Vincent Van Higo. Oh, we're killing it, Ryan. Let's go. And Ryan Rembrandt. Yes, sir.
That's excellent.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Good job, Ryan.
That's really good, Ryan. It took me Bob Rossler took me a while. But once I got that one, they were all great. Well done. John Markowski. Says Valspar equals paint equals colors. Since I was a kid, obsessed with Crayola, box of 64 crayons. I usually say crowns, but I was told to say crayons. Colors included in that beautiful, beautiful box. Okay, here we go. Sam Burnt Sienna. Nice. Just Indigo Thomas. Matt Fitzpatrickle Me Pink. How about this one? Matthew Granny Smith Apple. Harrison Apricot. And finally, Max Aroni and Cheese McGreevy. I think Ryan wins.
Yeah, I think Ryan wins this week. That was excellent.
They were Ryan all very good. They were all very well thought out. You guys are very creative. But man, Garrick Vincent Van Higo,
yeah,
is elite. Also, K.H. Leonardo da Vinci, elite.
Ryan Rembrandt is excellent.
Pablo Bill Picasso. Luke Donald Tello. And Bob Rossler.
I have it on good authority that before Ryan actually like puts his final product down on, you know, Twitter, he like takes notes. Like he is deep into this, just like John Markowski is. Yeah, some of these guys are really kind of going to the mat and putting some time in. So it's reflected certainly in Ryan's this week.
That is a Hall of Fame level Strokes Gained narrative.
That's lineup. First ballot. The cool thing is because you guys are dropping the Strokes Gained narrative, we can click on that. And when we actually do the Hall of Fame Strokes Gained narrative, which I suppose should be my responsibility, I can go back and check everybody's. And we can have like on the first sort of induction ceremony, we can have like 10. I'm sure John Markowski will have four or five of them. And then we'll have,
we could basically put them all. We could just do it like baseball, right? We'll put it out there. Is this a Hall of Famer or not? And if it reaches the threshold, it'll be admitted.
Yes. That's great. Wow. By the way, do you say Jaguar or Jaguar?
Jaguar.
You're wrong. Do you say iron or iron? I don't know if you're wrong or not. I'm pretty sure you're wrong. It annoys me when people say
I say Jaguar. Iron.
Iron. Okay. I think that's right. Why do you say Jaguar? That's not how you pronounce it.
What do you say? Jaguar?
No, Jaguar.
Jaguar. I don't know.
Why wire? Know. Like, where does the wire? No, you're not alone. I think the majority might actually say Jaguar, but you talked about how you pronounced something earlier. And so it's just the Jaguar thing. I don't get that. I don't get it.
I never thought about it.
Well, fix it.
So what should I be saying?
Jaguar. It's U-A-R. Where does wire come from? Jaguar.
Jaguar. Okay. Well, I'll try. All right. Enough free ads. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back on Tuesday, Mega Preview Pod. Get your picks in for the one and done. Get your brackets in, I guess, for March Madness, March Mania. Maybe I'm not allowed to say March Madness. Otherwise, big thanks, producer Troy, does all the hard work behind the scenes. Sian Ajad, available on Twitter at Sian Ajad. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.